Hi, Dominique, and welcome to another edition of The Week Ahead. How are you doing?
Very well, Andrew. Thank you. How is the weather in London?
It's okay. Just so you know, and I think it's very pertinent, is there's a halo around your head, which is great.
Ooh, very
So
interesting.
I think it's going to add even more of weight
Insight.
behind your insights. Sorry for those listening, a little bit of bad humor. So let's dive in, as we always like to do, about what were the key data events. Obviously there's a lot going on, market reactions, comments from the Fed, or obviously US officials, whether Iran or growth or inflation. So however you'd like to start, go for it.
So the big data was today with PCE inflation, consumption, income, GDP. So far so good, in line with expectation, except with GDP. This was the second estimate of the fourth quarter. It was lowered largely due to consumption, which makes sense. I never believed those super high consumption estimates based on the limited recovery in employment we had in the fourth quarter. So really what matters is not so much the data here, but what is going on with the war and the comments on both sides. As Bilal daily shows, the betting market are shifting their expectation for an end to the war next month.
Correct.
And for me, the duration that becomes economically significant is about 2 months, because as you know, economic time is always slower than market time. People adjust their spending, their expectation over a month, 2 months. 2 months, I think, if oil prices stay close to $100, then we're starting to talk about significant economic effects. So not just higher inflation, but this is going to take out from the real income of American consumers, which we saw this morning on a real basis in January. It was almost flat. So there's a good chance that if betting market is correct, consumer income is going to contract. And that's not good at all, because it probably means consumption will go down as well. And the US economy is 70% consumption. So not great.
And obviously the initial reaction in US and also Europe is higher front end rates because of inflation, and higher oil prices. But obviously, like we say, every crisis can play out differently. Are you surprised by that?
I think in my view, the market initially was really off its skis in shaving off, I think, one and a half cuts, Fed cuts this year, and the move up in the front end rates. I think we're going to have an increase in headline inflation if energy prices stay where they are. But what is really important is what happens to core inflation. That's going to be what is driving the Fed. And there, if you look at the last two oil shocks, so the pandemic and then just before the GFC, very different ones. Just before the GFC, core inflation didn't budge. And during the pandemic, core inflation followed headline inflation, largely, I think, because we had labor shortages during the pandemic. So labor had a lot of bargaining power and they were able to extract nominal wage increases. While in 2007-08, nominal wages didn't budge, real wage growth slowed because of the increase in headline inflation, but there were no generalized inflationary pressure from the oil shock. And in my view, that's where we are now in terms of labor market. This is what I call the wobbly labor market, because it kind of looks okay if you look at the unemployment rate, but once you start scratching under the surface, it's clear it's not a strong labor market. So in my view, the shaving of the Fed cuts is not justified. And I would add that if you look at what the Fed did in 2007-08, they started cutting in September 2007, even though you had this ramp up in headline inflation, and even though they were worried about inflation. The Fed was mentioned inflation risk as a concern up to its September 2008 meeting. And yet, during that time, they cut, I believe, 325 basis points. So they cut massively. And this was not driven by the GFC, because clearly until we had the Lehman bankruptcy, the Fed, thought it was business as usual. So they are, the mandate has two legs, and they cannot let go of the employment side of the mandate.
And oil was also pretty high then, or had it already started coming off?
No, oil was very high until the middle of 2008. And what's interesting is that in 2007-08, break-evens didn't move, not even the 2 years. But starting mid-year, long-term break-even literally collapsed. And the Fed, 3 months later, actually worse, 3 months plus a systemic bankruptcy, so the Lehman bankruptcy, finally realized that this was a very serious situation. So they remained worried about inflation until September 2008, and yet they
They
cut
cut
because they
anyway,
had,
yeah.
yeah.
That's a great point. I mean, listen, definitely some of these moves seem to be driven by some very heavy positioning. And what you know what so it's possible that that's what also forced a lot of the kind of big sell-off, not just in the US, but UK and Europe as well. But obviously the US is also much more better insulated. Gas prices have not gone up 50% in the US.
Yes and no. So let's say there is more policy discretion because the US has an energy external trade that's balanced. If you look at the energy balance last year, it was 55 billion, which works out to about 15 basis points of GDP. So if the US government suddenly starts saying to refiners or producers, we impose a price freeze, or it starts really limiting their freedom to adjust prices, there's not much they can do. While if you are an oil importing country and you impose price control, you're likely to run out of energy. So it's more likely. No, that's really sad. So you're more likely to actually give subsidies and put the move some of the cost of the oil shock to the government balance sheet. Basically, you can't afford this in a market economy to tell suppliers, I'm not paying you the market rate. They just won't supply. While in the US, because we have the energy onshore, there is a scope for the administration to interfere with the price mechanism and prevent consumer price increases in that way.
Well, I guess then the energy, the oil company, say, example, I guess there's only so much that they can, I guess they can ship. It's not like gas. Like gas, there's like real infrastructure kind of limits how much they can ship. So if the price was 20% more for oil, if they sold it to Europe, as an example, because price controls, I guess they could ship more oil. But I guess the government would say, like, this
Don't
is a
she?
temporary measure, don't
Yeah.
do it.
Yeah.
So I think the US should be in, it's again generally a better position than Europe
100%.
on. Okay, so your biggest pushback on the market over the last since the war with Iran started is you don't understand why this many cuts got, you know, what was it? So it's one focus. So it was 2.5 before, and now it's 1.5.
It's just 0.9. So that's one pushback, and the other one is my other pushback is on equities and in general. The reaction has been like monetary tightening. That's the reaction. You have stronger dollar, weaker bonds, somewhat weaker equities, and I think it's because the market expects President Trump to turn around just like he did last year. But it's not going to work because last year we had a huge risk-off sell-off. So a bit scary. And that's, I think, what triggered the administration. While this year, because the sell-off has been mild, I think it's unlikely to bring about the turnaround in policies. So it's a bit paradoxical. The market needs to get a lot worse to get the results it wants. But because it expects those results, it's actually not selling off. So to me, the pressure to try to make a deal with Iran, no matter how difficult it looks, it's more likely to come from politics, from U.S. Right. domestic politics.
Right, right. And as an energy friend of mine has pointed out, it's not just up to the U.S. It's not like he could just turn around on tariffs. Like Iran is involved, Israel's involved. There may be other, you know, obviously Gulf countries are getting fired on. So kind of the biggest takeaway is financial conditions in the U.S. have tightened in the last, you know, and yet equities are fairly stable and yields in the U.S. have gone higher. So something doesn't seem to fit. Now, some of it in the short term that can be positioning. So on the U.S. side, is it more likely that the whole curve comes lower, you think, going forward as this continues? Or should the shape of the curve change as well?
So right now, Mikey, that it comes down and the trigger actually could be the Fed meeting this coming week. I expect Powell to surprise on the dovish side, not so much because his view of the world has changed. I mean, the data we got today, you know, did not, in my view, signal worse inflation trends. Yes, PC core, I think, up to 3.1% year on year. But the Fed itself has done some research showing that there is residual seasonality in January core PC. Also, the better inflation indicator, because remember, the Fed is targeting headline, not core inflation. The reason the Fed always talks about core inflation, it's because it is seen as a better indicator of trend. But that's not the only indicator that the Fed looks at. A lot of people, including academics, think that trimmed mean inflation that exclude the more extreme price changes, both increases and decreases, is a better indicator of trend. And on that basis, you can see clearly that disinflation is continuing. So there is no incremental additional inflation worries. If anything, today's data shows that the economy is a bit weaker, but the Fed has 500 PhD economists. So I think they had already figured out that growth was not that robust. So I think, you know, there's no reason for the Fed to espouse the hawkishness of the market. And so I expect that Powell in his press conference is just going to reset expectation and remind the market, you know, we're very committed to our inflation target, but remember we have two legs, and so we'll also be looking at the labor market. And that might be enough to trigger a move down in the curve.
Okay. So for the June meeting, let's see, What are your odds on the June meeting?
So if we stay where we are above $100. I think there's a good chance we have a recession. Now, this is going to show up in the data with fast increases in the unemployment rate. So between now and June, we have, I think, we'll have the March NFP, the April NFP, we'll have 3 months of data. So I would think I would give only 30% chance of a cut, and that's because, as I keep repeating, but it's really important, economic time is slow. You need to give time for economic data okay. to change. So by that...
So where you deviate from the market, so that's like around where the market is, maybe a tiny bit higher, but so where you deviate from the market is the rest of the year.
100%. Because yeah. once the recession risk become clear, just like in 2007-08, and remember, this was not caused by the GFC up to September 2008 in its FOMC statement. The Fed said, we are concerned by inflation risk. But nevertheless, they cut massively because of the risk to the employment leg of the mandate. And also they felt empowered to cut because core inflation was stable and break-evens were basically not moving, not even 2-year break-even, which is quite extraordinary. So I think what could be going on here with the market move is that the market has been very conditioned by the pandemic, you know, when initially everybody, the Fed, myself, underestimated inflation risk. So it could be, you know, this could be the prior, that is their reference point. And in my view, system runs not valid.
So they're overcompensating for...
Yeah, fine.
That makes sense. Okay, that's it. I mean, I pretty much agree. It's just tough. I think some of it is positioning right now. A lot of, you know, there's still a lot of degrossing from investors positioning, but the idea that this may lead to a recession, whether here or in Europe, has to be fairly high at this point. If this continues. And we've already seen, certainly in the US, UK, we had already seen fairly weak numbers. Growth numbers. I mean, so we saw very weak growth numbers look like in Canada today as well. Okay, so moving forward to that week ahead, what does your crystal ball say?
It's just the Fed. I mean, there is no, we have 5 data releases this morning, so next week it's really about the Fed. I think they will just keep the SCP as it is, largely because there's too much uncertainty. So no big reason to change. We get the PPI, so they will produce, and we will produce an estimate for core PC for February, but that's it, really. So, and the war, of course.
Yeah. Okay. Any strong views on the politics, how things may play out here? I mean, obviously we have Varesh giving a lot of updates for our clients as well, but
no, I think, you know, as you just said, Iran, it's not just up to the US to make a deal. Iran has to agree. They have listed their conditions. They are very onerous for the US, you know, no more military bases, Iran to be able to enrich uranium as it is entitled under the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. They want sanction relief. They want what else? Compensation. All these things which really seem politically unfeasible in the US at the moment, which means things need to get a lot worse before they start improving. And to be clear, there's a scope for things to get a lot worse, because there are 2 things that are different about this oil shock compared with the previous one. The First thing is that in previous oil shock, the impact on importing countries were partly offset by higher export to oil exporting countries and also higher investment, recycling of petrodollar, higher investment by exporters in importers' financial market. This time around, we're not going to get that. We're going to have massive wealth destruction with oil exporting countries, so they won't be able to bring those stabilizing flows. And the other thing that's different is Viraj tells me is that we're going to face unprecedented shortage, and it's not just oil or natural gas, but also key chemicals linked to urea, so fertilizer, helium, which is needed in chips manufacturing to cool, and we're already seeing chips on fire due to the AI investment boom. It's going to get much worse. Sulfuric acid, I think, is also on the front.
You mean on fire, like the prices are on fire, not that it's literally on fire because they're not being cooled.
Okay, we have to be careful. Yes,
Exactly.
indeed. So this is serious, and I don't think the seriousness is priced in, and I think the resolution of this requires the market to get much worse, or political pressure on President Trump to get much worse.
Okay. Sounds great. Any parting words for our clients?
Just good luck, everybody. These are really tough times, and it looks like it's going to last for a while.
Okay, cool. And I want to wish, obviously everyone best of luck in the markets. We've been rolling out a lot of new things, including the kind of Middle East or kind of Iran war tracker. We have a new daily. Obviously, a core part of our business now is also providing kind of sales and trade ideas, trade execution of those ideas with our clients. And that business has been growing. Obviously, things have been pretty busy the last few weeks. But if anyone has any questions about that, please feel free to reach out to myself or anybody. And wish everyone, I guess if they listen to it on Friday or Saturday, a very nice weekend. And if it's on Monday, good luck next week.